Good morning. All right, we will be in Genesis chapter 39 this morning. Genesis chapter 39. Some of the verses will be on the screen, some will not. So if you want to turn there to be able to follow along as we get further in. The one challenge this morning will be I don't have a screen, so I'll have to kind of look with you. Genesis chapter 39. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Now, if you remember last week, as we looked at the story of Joseph, some of his brothers wanted him dead because they didn't like the fact that he was the favorite. They didn't like the fact that he had this dream where everybody was going to bow down to him. They didn't take that well. And so they just wanted him dead. They wanted to be done with him. And one of the brothers said, well, instead of killing him, why don't we throw him in a pit? And his idea was, I'll come back and rescue him from this pit later. But while he was gone and Joseph was down the bottom of this pit, slave traders came by. And as these slave traders came through, the brothers had the idea of, well, why don't we get rid of him and make a little money in the process? And so they decided to sell him. And Reuben gets back, and he's gone, and they come up with a story that he's been killed to tell the dad. Dad is distraught, and now we find where Joseph is in the midst of all this. He had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. Now, we're going to look at this story in a series of questions this morning. I think questions we can ask about Joseph and his situation, and questions that it might cause us to ask in our own lives. And as we think of Joseph being bought and sold here, we realize that sometimes life is going to take difficult turns. And as we gear ourselves toward this idea of questions we'll ask ourselves, I think we have to just acknowledge this. I would imagine for the Zellers, if you had asked them a year ago, would they be moving to Idaho, they probably would have said, no, we've got a house here we like, we've got a church family we like, the life group's going well, we've got a son in college here, there's a lot of things going on, we're here. And yet life takes difficult turns. For a lot of us, I think we look at our lives and we can see a series of very difficult turns along the way. Things that we did not anticipate, things that we did not expect. And yet we have an opportunity when those things come along to decide, do we have faith in God in the midst of this, or do we let this knock us off our feet? The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. Now hang on a second. These two verses don't go together in our culture. He was bought and sold to someone, and now we see that the Lord is with him. Those things don't sound the same. We think of when people are treated as property, God can't be involved in the mix of this situation. It just doesn't seem possible. But it says the Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered even in the midst of the slavery. And he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. Do we believe, truly believe, that the Lord is with us? Do we believe that regardless of our situation, whether things are going well or things are going poorly, that God is with us? As I was setting up my tent this weekend and trying hard not to envy everyone's trailers and RVs, I thought to myself, you know, I'd love to have some of these things, to have a different lifestyle of what is happening. And I realized, I look around in Oregon and I pass street after street after street, everybody's got a travel trailer. And if you don't have a travel trailer here, you might be in the minority. I don't know. And I look around and I just think, you know, I'd like to have more and I'd like to have better. And some of you with travel trailers who think, yeah, my travel trailer's not all that. I don't know what he's talking about. You don't realize that it's a blessing. And for me with a tent, I put my tent up and there were a lot of RVs and travel trailers. There were also some tents out there of folks and some tents that were not as nice as my tent. And I thought to myself, you know, I bet there are a few people here, not many, but a few, that would look and see that tent and say, oh, if I had a tent like that. And we all find ourselves somewhere along this scale. If we were in the midst of slavery here, as Joseph is, and we were to hear our lives described as God being with us and us prospering, I don't know if that's the way we would see it. And it would cause us, I hope, to ask the question of, do we really believe that God is with us? And if we do, are our lives showing that? Because for a lot of us, it seems like we're living this constant struggle where we're asking, where are you, God? This constant struggle where it seems like God is distant as those stars in the sky. He's far away. And God is actually instead with us in our midst, whether it's going well, whether it's going poorly, or where everything is just kind of coasting along. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of this household, And he entrusted his care to everything he owned. Even as a slave, he was been given all this authority over things. Which brings us, I think, to ask the question, not only do we believe that God is with us, but do people see that God is with us? And do people see that we believe that? Do people see God in us in what we do? Because for all those folks that look at the stars or look at the eclipse this week, who are seeing just this incredible nature and science and all of these things, if they're not seeing God, I think a piece of why they don't see God is because of how we go about living life. If we are living a life that shows we are with God, people are going to take notice of that. I was thinking this morning, because it fit into our Bible class, several years ago, David and I went to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, which is the town where I grew up. And the Senior Bowl, if you're not familiar with it, college seniors are selected. It's kind of an all-star game for football. And they all go to Mobile, and NFL coaches and scouts are all there to watch to see how they play. NFL coaches coach the teams, and the scouts are watching. And it's really a neat thing because you've got all these guys who are just about to be rich and famous, but they're not yet. They're still college students or college graduates, I guess. And you've got all these guys there, and the heads have not gotten as big yet as the heads may get when they get multi-million dollar contracts. And you can go, and you can watch their practices during the week. And so when we went down there, we went a day early so we could watch a practice. And we watched all these guys practicing, and we went down on the field after the practice, and I went up to this guy who was so much taller than me with my son, who was so much smaller at the time, and I said, could we get a picture with you? And he had a big smile on his face, and as a recent college student, he was like, sure, that'd be great. And so we take a picture with the guy, and I put it on Facebook at the time, and we're all excited about it. The guy is David Carr. And David Carr is the quarterback of the Oakland or whatever they are, Vegas Raiders soon. David Carr just signed the highest contract for a quarterback in the NFL a few months ago. And I look at my Facebook, and there's a picture of my son with David Carr. And Derek Carr, David's his brother. Derek Carr, he was also an NFL guy. Derek Carr, who is this really neat guy, and I started to follow him on Twitter because I thought, my kid has a picture with him. I thought this is kind of cool. I want to see what this guy's about. Every other post of Derek Carr on Twitter is about what God is doing in his life. I have no idea what his religious background is. I have no idea if we sat down over coffee at Starbucks, if we'd agree on things or not. What I do know is here's this guy with this incredible following, and he uses it to talk about God. And I look at it, and I think you could play in the NFL your entire career and make millions and millions of dollars, and no one know anything about God as a result of that, or you could do what Derek Carr is doing, and Derek Carr sees God in his life, and as a result, the people around him are going to see God in his life. Now, most of us will never have the following he has. And so we may look at it and we think, well, I really can't impact that many people. It's really just not that big a deal. But what you can impact is the people that are around you. And for Joseph, it would be very easy for Joseph to look at his life at this point and to say, I am a slave. My freedom has been taken away. Life is not fair. God is distant and far away. But what instead he recognizes is that God is there with him, and because of that, he is going to be a slave in the best possible way he can be a slave. That is the lot that has been put before him, and he is going to do it in the most godly way possible. And as a result, Potiphar notices. And because Potiphar notices, Potiphar begins to give him authority, which is going to lead Joseph to some pretty amazing places, but not quickly and not in the way we might want. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care with Joseph in charge. He did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. So we ask the question, do we believe that God is with us? And then we ask the question, do other people see that God is with us? Which I think leads us to this, are we being a blessing to those around us? Because if God is with us and people can see it, are we living in such a way that it blesses them? Everyone sitting in this room should be the best neighbor that your neighbors have. Because we are followers of God, and that's what we do. We treat people differently than other people are treated. So when your neighbors frustrate you, you have a moment of frustration because you're human, and then you are the best neighbor you can be. And you do everything you can to make things better. Where I lived in Searcy, Arkansas before I came here, had a great house that would cost three times what it costs there here, which is why I don't have a great house presently. Great house, great area. And I lived in one spot, and two houses down was a professor at Harding who was also a song leader at the other church across town, really neat guy. And between us, there was a guy who drove a truck for a living. Nice guy. We got along real well as neighbors, but he was obviously going through some troubles in life. And one night, I remember hearing a lot of commotion, and I looked out my front window to watch someone repossessing his 18-wheeler. And I thought to myself, this is a tough day. And it's just like you see on TV. This truck comes in behind it, and they're trying to do everything very quickly. It's about 1 in the morning, and they're hooking the 18-wheeler up, and they're starting to take it out. And his wife comes out of the house, about half-dressed, chasing the 18-wheeler down the street and trying to get them to stop, and they've been trained not to stop for anything, and for whatever reason they decide to stop, and her purse has been left in the front, and they let her get in and get her purse out before they then take their truck away. Short time after that, their house was foreclosed on, and they left just in the middle of the night one night. Took the landscaping stones with them. It was just the strangest thing ever. We found out later, after about a month of watching the house just kind of sit there, that no one knew that they had left. And the bank was going to foreclose, but they didn't know yet that anybody was gone. The door was even open to the house. And the neighbor and I, on either side, started mowing the lawn. And the reason we mowed the lawn were a couple things. One, it was an eyesore, and we lived there. But two, our thought was, who else is going to do it? You know, they don't realize that the house is decrepit at this point. It's going to have to be sold at some point. And let's do what we can to try to help. And when I really realized that we were trying to do it for the right reason was when we started mowing the backyard. Because no one saw that. And it was behind a fence. And our thought was, let's try to take care of this as best we can. And we got a rotation going where he would do it one week, I would do it the next week. We'd go back and forth. If we are going to live as Christians, we are going to live differently than the people around us. You are going to be the best neighbor that your neighbors have. You're going to be the best coworker that your coworkers have. And you are going to try to do your best to be at peace with your family. And more than all of that, because when you do it, people are going to look at you and think, what is wrong with them? Because this is not how people act. Then you're going to tell them, God is with me. And this is why, and this is how. And this is the opportunity that's put before Joseph. And because he is doing things in a godly way, Potiphar takes note and does the right thing. So this is the point where we start to think, well, hey, everything good is going for Joseph, and things are starting to turn in the right direction. And then we learn about there's more to the story. We learn about Potiphar's wife. Now, we first learn a little bit about Joseph. Joseph is well put together and handsome. This is part of why I just love the story of Joseph, because it feels so personal. Joseph is well put together. He's handsome. He's strong. He's a strapping young man. And Potiphar's wife starts to notice this servant around the house and thinks, hey, I like that guy. And so she comes to Joseph and says, Joseph, I want you to go to bed with me. And Joseph says, no, can't do that. Can't disrespect Potiphar, my boss. Can't disrespect God. Sorry, Mrs. Potiphar. Just can't do it. And she continues to watch Joseph and continues to go after Joseph and finally reaches the point where it's almost an ultimatum of, Joseph, if you want life to continue the way it is, you're going to have to sleep with me. This is part of the deal. Now, I want you to put all this for a moment in a 2017 America context. Okay? How many folks would run away from this? Now, we don't know a lot about Mrs. Potiphar. We don't know a lot about what she looked like, how old she was, anything like that. But what we do know is we have a guy with all the chips stacked against him and an opportunity to just do something to make the problem go away. And if you think about what people think of men in our culture nowadays especially, the expectation for so many would be you would hear this story after he had finally given in to this abuse, given in to something that he didn't feel like he was in control of, and we would feel bad for Joseph and we would understand. And yet Joseph was not content with any of that. What we read about Joseph is that Joseph ran. Joseph had this opportunity, this whatever it is before him, and instead he runs away. This ultimatum, he could he could go the wrong direction, and he could just try to make things get along, or he could do what he did, and he ran. And he ran to the point that he ran, leaving his coat in her hands, and how much of his clothing, he ran. He's gone. And we would feel like at this point, this should be the point in the story that because Joseph went this far to do the right thing, that Joseph is going to be blessed by God right now like we have never seen before. And we would ask this question, what do we expect when we do the right thing? Because I think for most of us, what we expect is we're going to be blessed for that. You have a job where your boss has asked you to do something that is completely unethical, and you say, I stand above that because I have character, and then you lose your job. And you think to yourself, well, hang on a second, God. This is not how it's supposed to work. I did the right thing. I'm supposed to be blessed for that. And it doesn't always work that way. And in Joseph's case, it doesn't work that way in a pretty big way. And so Joseph, he runs, and Mrs. Potiphar lies to Mr. Potiphar and says, well, this slave of yours, he tried to sleep with me. What? She's lying now. And if we think anything about what happens when you do the right thing, when you do the wrong thing, you're supposed to be punished for that, right? Isn't that how God is supposed to work? She's lying now about Joseph and says, he did this. This was not me. He did this. And Joseph is sent to prison as a result of that. And all this story has gone completely awry, and yet we keep reading this phrase that we read at the beginning that, and the Lord is with Joseph. If this is the Lord with us, do we still want this? Because this sounds kind of hard. This doesn't sound like the way we want life to go. And it brings us the question, how do we react when we are not rewarded? And I like to think that we look at it as a moment of faith and something we can learn from, but for so many of us, these things knock us completely off track. We don't know what to do. And the whole system seems wrong because we have somewhere along the way, excuse me, bought into the idea of karma. Everybody gets what's coming to them. Everybody gets rewarded if they do good. They get bad if they do evil. And it doesn't always work out quite that simply. Now, in the very end, it does work out that simply. But most of us don't have the patience to see that far ahead. So what do we do when we don't get rewarded? Do we, like Joseph, still trust that God is with us? And I think we need to know. He is. God is with us. He's not distant. He is not far away. He doesn't leave when the bad things happen and show up for the good things to happen. He is with us at all times and in all things. And we might look at this verse and get tired of it, but I'm going to bring it through a few times during the course of this story because I feel like this is what God is doing. We read in Romans 8:28, we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. God is working in all things. Whether it is good that comes to you or bad that comes to you, God can work in that. Whether it is the plan working out exactly as the plan should work, or the plan not working out at all as the plan should work, God is with you. Whether the job is going well or the job is going poorly, God is with you. Whether you can see it clearly or it's just as hazy as the smoke we see coming from the fires, God is with you. I was thinking this week, and we'll close here in just a sec. I was thinking this week as I was in my office, I looked on my wall. And on my wall, there is a diploma from Harding University. And that diploma reads all the fancy stuff, and it's in a font that's almost hard to read because it's old English looking, and people with big titles have all signed it, and there's a gold seal on it. And I went to the bookstore, and I bought a way too expensive frame to put it in because of how much it cost to get it in the first place. I thought it deserved a nice frame. And there it is on my wall, and when I look at it, I'm always drawn to one thing on that diploma. It's not the bachelor or whatever. It's not the president and the board guy. There's one thing that I'm always drawn to, and it's the July of 2008 date that is on there. Because in July of 2008, I was 35 years old. Actually, I was about to turn 35 the next month. Birthday coming up, by the way, if anybody's keeping track. In July of 2008, I was about to turn 35 years old. I never planned on graduating from college at 35. That was not how it was supposed to work. I graduated from high school at 17. I did my first week of college before my 18th birthday. I couldn't have voted if it was an option. There I was, 500 miles away from home in this place. And college for those 4 years, I thoroughly enjoyed, but I didn't know what in the world I was supposed to be doing. And I didn't finish. And I ran out of money and I ran out of time and I went home and tried to figure out what in the world I was going to do with life. And finally, I found myself back there at Harding again. And I still really didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew that was the way to get there somehow. And in the midst of all that, I found a way to a church that was looking for a youth minister at the time and was willing to take a leap on a guy who did not have the fancy frame and the gold seal. And while I was there in Searcy as a youth minister for 10 years, I learned that Harding would let youth ministers take one class a semester free. And I realized, this is my ticket. And so for the next, I don't even know how many semesters, one class at a time, I continued to go and continued to go and continued to go. Kids came along in the midst of that. Life challenges came along in the midst of that. And I continued to go and continued to go into the point of June of 2008. I was left with art appreciation and PE. Those were my last two. And I took them and I got the piece of paper to put on my wall, and here I am. And I look back at that and I think, so many times in between, I thought to myself, God, what in the world has happened? I shouldn't be at a gift shop in Alabama working for minimum wage. I should be a college graduate with 2.5 children and a dog and a house and a picket fence and all of those. That's how the plan is supposed to work. And the plan has not worked that way. Where are you, God? And the whole time, God is saying to me, right here. Because that is not the path that leads to you to where you need to go. In the midst of this story of Joseph and Potiphar and slavery and brothers and wanting him dead and pits and all of these things, a minister friend of mine asked me the question, how else would he get to Egypt? Because they were in the promised land. For generations they had heard, this is the promised land, this is where you're supposed to be. Why would you leave that? That's where you're supposed to be. And for Joseph, the road that takes him to where we're going to learn over the next couple weeks, he needs to be where God needs him, and even where his family, who sent him there out of malice, where they need him to be, this is the road to get there. And in our lives, sometimes our road is an easy one, and man, we love those times, don't we? And sometimes our road is a difficult one. And for Joseph, I hope, as you look at the road of Joseph, this is a whole lot more difficult than any road that we're going to have to deal with. But wherever you're at in the road that God has you on, he is leading you somewhere. And if we stop questioning him long enough or wondering where he's at long enough and realize that he is right here with us, because that's where he said he would be, then we can learn where he takes us on this road. And for all of us, I think like Joseph, we have an Egypt, and I don't know what yours is, and I do know that most likely yours is probably different than mine. Not always about a physical location. Sometimes it's the thing God will have us to do. Sometimes it's the place God will plug us in. As much as the Zellers, sorry I'm picking on you guys so much this morning, as much as the Zellers didn't expect to go to Idaho if you were to talk to them a year ago, I'll bet at the same time if you were to talk to them a year before they came here, they didn't know they would be leading a life group of young adults with people they'd never met before. And yet, because they did that and trusted that road God would take them on, people's lives have been enhanced and their walk with God is better because of the effort put in by one family. And if you think that one family can make a difference, then I'm here to tell you that your one family can also make a difference. Your one family can be the Joseph in somebody's lives. And this morning, the struggle in the story of Joseph is he finds himself imprisoned because of all of this. Which, if slavery wasn't bad enough, prison's a whole nother step. And this might be the time where we begin to question God, and yet God is still with Joseph. Wherever you find yourself today, whether it's in the midst of burdens that you didn't expect, or whether things are going well, God wants to be with you. And God wants you to realize that he is with you. This morning, if you're visiting or you're flirting with the idea of having a relationship with God, he would like for that idea to start today to take root. He would like for you to have a relationship with him, to be part of his family. And he would love to see you baptized into Christ this morning, for you to start to walk in a new life that is walking with him. This morning, if you're in that life and you thought to yourself, because I'm following God, this was supposed to have been a whole lot easier. I think if you read through this book long enough, you will find it is not a book filled with easy stories. It is a book filled with flawed people who live a lot of difficulties in life, but who continue to have faith that God is with them and that God will bless them in the end. And for each of us this morning, God is still with us. If there's something you're struggling with that you'd like to share with your church family, if there's things we could pray about for you, or if you'd like to become a Christian this morning, please come while we stand and sing.